Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and once again, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy life and your busy morning to join me on my radio program. Today is Monday, February 8th, 2021. I think the whole country is going through an Antarctic winter. I know here in Florissant, it's now just 14 degrees. It is too cold even for the puppy dogs to go out, I'm telling you. And it's bound to get colder. The month of February is always the coldest wintry month up here in Florissant. So I guess we're set for another 4 weeks at least of this cold, rainy, wet, icy stuff. This morning on The Cross in the Desert, I'm going to take us on a journey into the lives of Iranian refugees in Turkey. I have several stories I want to talk with you about, and I want to try to help you connect with what life is like for Iranian refugees, especially in Turkey. And I have several friends that are waiting in limbo just to get an interview with immigration and just to be processed to leave and to go to a better country where there is definitely more freedom and more work availability. For Iranians who are suffering under a dictatorship government, the closest proximity for them to flee to, especially if the police, the government is in pursuit of them, the closest proximity for most of them is into Turkey. At one time, Turkey was a fairly safe haven for Iranian refugees. But now with Erdogan and more fundamental Islamic tendencies, and with the UNHCR and the Turkish government, things have become far more dangerous and difficult for Iranians. I want you to understand a little bit about this process. I don't claim to know everything. I have to talk to some of my contacts and my friends in Turkey, and they will tell you several stories about how things are for them. Now, understand this. The Iranian regime, the Iranian government, of course, is Shia Muslim. Turkey is Sunni Muslim. Now, 99.9% of the Iranians that flee across the border into Turkey are only Muslim in name only. They're not really Muslims. However, the Turkish government will treat them, in most cases, because they're from a Shia background, and Shia and Sunnis don't get along, Iranians are going to be really in a persecuted position. They're going to be discriminated against in many ways, simply because this is a Turkish Sunni government. That's just one reason. And 99% of the jobs are given, of course, to the Turkish people there. And so for Iranians who flee over and claim asylum and start to work, they have to do so underground and conceal it, because they're not allowed to work unless, A, they have a work permit, or B, because most jobs go to Turkish people. And so it's very difficult for Iranians to survive in Turkey. And that's just a few of the reasons why it is. This morning, I want to share with us a very sad story that I came across yesterday from my good friend Molly Rosbah from the Iranian Women Organization. Molly does an incredible amount of hard work with Turkish refugees through her organization. She will financially help them, spiritually help them, that is, disciple those Iranians who have converted to Christianity. In many cases, she will set up Zoom meetings that Iranians can be discipled through churches in Turkey. And so she does a lot of hard, dedicated work with the Iranian refugees. I came across a story that was written in Farsi, and there was a Google translation of it, which was not good at all. And so I asked Molly to translate this story for me, to help me, because I knew it was a sad story from my other friends. And I want to share that with you this morning, because this is a story that is representative of thousands of other Iranian refugees whose stories we don't know about. But this is the story of Hassan Bardar, I have to say it right, Hassan Bardia Garbi, Hassan Bardia Garbi. He is a statistic now. That's just the sad reality. Because he took his life, he committed suicide. But he has a story, and I want to share his story with us briefly this morning so that you have an understanding of the plight of Iranian refugees living in Turkey. It was this past Saturday, February 6th, 2021, that 25-year-old Iranian asylum seeker Hassan Bardari Garabi, Hassan Bardia Garabi, who lived in the Sparta province of Turkey, he hanged himself inside of a metal cage in a park. Why? He was suffering from extensive physical and mental abuses. He was subjected to various pressures related to the Turkish refugee province and living without money, without funds, and he was homeless in a park. Now, according to Bardia's close friends, he had attempted suicide twice before, and his friends stepped in and stopped him. Bardia was suffering from depression. He had become unemployed because of the pandemic. He had been unable to pay his rent for his room, and the landlord kicked him out. And as a result, he became homeless and was forced to sleep in the park. Bardia never wanted to have to depend on anyone. He was a hard-working young man, just 25, and he was ashamed to have to ask for help. But he had informed the UNHCR and the Turkish Assam Partners office several times. He was threatening them. He said, "Look, please help me. If you don't, I'm just going to kill myself. I cannot take this hopelessness and despair anymore." He was under a lot of pressure. But 4 years ago, before all of this began and before the pandemic hit, Bardia converted from Islam to Christianity. He had found his hope and freedom in Jesus. And now he wanted to leave Iran. It was very dangerous for him as a convert from Islam to stay in Iran. So, of course, he followed the path of most Iranians and left for Turkey. He was from Shiraz, Iran, and he was going to Turkey. He knew the situation there, but he was hoping for a better life, just to live out his dreams. But psychological depression, poverty, hopelessness, and the pandemic all combined to destroy his hopes and dreams. He knew that he had a chance of being deported back to Turkey. A lot of my Iranian refugees are telling me that the immigration office is now working hard at deporting them back. He knew if he went back from Turkey to Iran that he would be imprisoned. And instead of reaching out to help this young man, they didn't. They ignored his pleas. And this time, Bardia didn't have friends to intervene and stop him. He hanged himself. He ended his life. And unfortunately, the feelings and the hopelessness that Bardia had is very, very similar to thousands of other Iranian refugees now living in Turkey, struggling to survive. And now the process is very difficult for his family to obtain his body financially. That's very hard for them to do. And I shared this story with you this morning to urge you to pray for my Iranian refugee friends in Turkey and to be their voice. For all of us who are on the internet, if we see the story of an Iranian refugee, please share that on your page. Please do what you can to be a voice for them. They truly need our help. And so Bardia ended his life in hopelessness and despair. But there are many more Iranians that feel the same way that Bardia felt. I want to also now just turn our attention to another difficult story. It's the story of a Christian pastor and his family in Turkey who are being threatened by the government to be deported back to Iran. And this is really an incredible story of a pastor. He fled Turkey after spending over a month in Iran's most notorious prison. He was desperate for help. And now he is facing deportation along with his family. His name is Pastor Emil Falahati. He's a former Muslim who came to Christ at the age of 23, and he planted house churches all across Tehran for 10 years. And he told the Christian Post, this article that I'm reading to you, that his family may soon have to flee after 4 years in Turkey or risk being sent back to the Islamic Republic and that certain death. Now, in Iran, Falahati was a convicted man. He was set to serve several years in prison for preaching the gospel of Jesus to a community of ex-Muslims. Along with his wife, Falahati, in Iran, secretly led worship services and traveled to the homes of fellow convert believers. But in August 2015, plainclothes police officers interrupted a prayer service. There were 30 people. This was in West Tehran. And Ismail Falahati said to the Christian Post he suspected that they had been ratted out, as Iran's Shia theocratic regime, of course, bans Christians from sharing their faith. So someone had ratted on him, had told on him. So they were all arrested. This was in 2015. They were questioned for hours while police searched his house. They gathered Bibles and all the Christian items. And eventually, Falahati, the owner of the garden, and two others are transferred to Section 209 of Evin Prison. Ismail spent 33 days in solitary confinement and was eventually charged with propagating against the Islamic regime and intent to disrupt, as they call, national security. He says, "I was tortured and questioned about my services and preaching the Bible." And this is the ongoing thing with every Christian in Iran. During his imprisonment, his wife and family, well, they were also arrested, tortured, questioned for 12 hours, and investigated because of his case. Now, on September 9th, Falahati was temporarily released on bail by the Revolutionary Court. He said he was told by guards that it would be better for him to leave Iran or run the risk of being harmed. So 40 days later, Ismail Falahati, his wife and two children, fled Iran. And a month after that, they arrived in Turkey, and they registered with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. So they've been there for 4 years. However, Falahati contends that the Turkish Immigration Department has not given his family a fair shake, as he says, especially after Turkish authorities found out about his new ministry work preaching to families in Turkey. Quote, "We don't receive any services which are provided for other refugees. We have no security, identity, and nationality only for the crime of being a Christian. It seems that we are in a bigger prison." Now, here's the latest information on Pastor Falahati and his family. They were arrested and put in a Turkish deportation camp, but thankfully, Iranian Women's Organization and my good friend Mally intervened and provided him with a lawyer, and now the lawyer has had him temporarily released from the deportation camp, and he is set to stand trial in Turkey for his Christian activities. Here's the bottom line. If after the trial he is convicted, he will be deported back to Iran and certainly be in prison for his Christian faith. And the sad state of affairs is that the custody of his children will be given to a strict Muslim family against their will. They are Christians, but they will be put in a strict Muslim family against their will. So what we need to do, we need to, first of all, take his story, and we need to put it on all of our pages. I've got his story up on my Praying for the Persecuted Church page, which has a good traffic. Lots of people traffic through that. I have it also on my Facebook page. So please, after the broadcast, go to my page and share it. Share it far and wide as you can. This is very important that his case is shared everywhere, that the awareness of his situation is made known to as many Christian groups as possible. And that includes Open Doors, that includes Voices of the Martyrs, that includes Save the Persecuted Christians. Whatever outlet we can find, we need to put Pastor Ismail Falahati's story. I'm saying that wrong, I know. Falahati's story there for all to read. So we need to put his case out there, number one. Number two, we need to faithfully pray for this family. I know I've said it millions of times here, but prayer is very powerful. God hears and answers our faithful praying. So we need to do this for this pastor. And when you share his story, continue to share it until I can get some information to us and update us on what's going on with this case. Because usually in situations like this with trials, it can take a long time before his trial finally comes to a judge, and there are witnesses and there is testimony. So this may be a while before his case is actually heard in a trial setting. And I will keep us updated on Pastor Falahati. Now, what about the situation for Iranian refugees? The UNHCR facilitates the asylum process of Iranian applicants and their transfer to third countries. Now, since September 2018, those applications have been reexamined by the Turkish Directorate General of Migration Management, DGMM. And according to DGMM figures, 3,588 Iranians applied for international protection in Turkey, and that was in the year 2018. Some experts point out that Turkey's geographical limitation to the Geneva Convention makes Iranian refugees who are regarded as other non-Europeans seeking refuge in the country vulnerable to living in precarious conditions. Lacking legal protections conferred by the refugee status, Iranians live under the constant fear of deportation as their fate depends on the ups and downs of bilateral relations between Tehran and Ankara. Erdemir, he's the director of the Turkey program at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. He's a former Turkish parliament member. He told that in an interview to Voice of America. Now, Besides the growing fear of deportation by Turkish authorities, Iranian refugees are also deeply concerned about the regime's alleged surveillance activities through the Revolutionary Guard's long reach. In other words, even though they're in Turkey, Iranian refugees suspect that they are under surveillance by the Revolutionary Guard. Some analysts argue that because Iranians can travel in Turkey for 90 days without a visa, Iranian intelligence can enter Turkey to spy on them, the dissidents and exiles. The lack of a visa requirement permits members of Iranian intelligence to enter into Turkey using their ordinary passports instead of having to show their official ones. This enables, quote, the Quds Force, which is an elite foreign operations unit of the Revolutionary Guards, to increase their activities in Turkey. This is very dangerous for Iranian refugees. To give you an example, Raha, who decided not to give her name out of concern for her security, believes Iranian agents are spying on political refugees like her in Van. That's a suburb of Turkey. It's a border city with Iran, actually. She says, the fear and insecurity are growing day by day, and I can feel the shadow of plainclothes Iranian agents over my head who wander among us in the gloomy streets of Van and do whatever they want to us, from harassing to kidnapping. Now, she cites a case. The strange kidnapping of Arash Shoashargh in broad daylight is clear proof of that. Arash Shoashargh is an Iranian journalist who fled for Turkey after being convicted for spreading lies and publishing without permission. That was back in 2017. In 2018, Shoashargh was arrested in Van by Turkish intelligence agents and extradited to Iran. As of 2019, he was detained in a prison in Rasht. In 2010, Turkey and Iran signed an agreement on legal cooperation that enables both to request extraditions. However, many refugees in Van, like Raha, fear that Iranian intelligence was involved in this man's arrest. And this goes on and on. Turkish officials turn a blind eye to their presence and pretend that refugees are lying, no matter what they claim. I'm a victim of these threats myself, including threat phone calls and documented invasion to my residence, while none of my complaints were taken serious by Turkish officials. So these Iranians are simply saying this: we are not safe in Turkey. They're coming across the border, that is the intelligence agents that are part of the Revolutionary Guard Corps. They're coming across the border, they're spying on us, they're harassing us, and in some cases they're kidnapping us, and the Turkish officials are turning a blind eye to what they're doing to us. So it's very dangerous for Iranian refugees living in Turkey, and it takes so long for interviews. I have a friend right now who left a very volatile, dangerous situation in Merivan. She's been living in Turkey now the past 3 years. She's actually got an education. She's worked in a lab. She's went to school. And now she's being threatened for deportation for no reason at all. Lots of Christians are also being deported back. And I've talked to my friend Molly, who says many Christians from Baptist to Presbyterian background are being shipped out of Turkey or being deported back, and the Catholics are being left alone. We don't know why, but this government is doing all of this now, and she says it's only because Joe Biden is now president and he's Catholic. We don't know the exact reason, but we know things are happening there, that many Christians are now being deported back from Turkey into Iran. So I wanted to share this with you so you understand what's going on with my friends and you understand the plight of Iranian refugees. And now what I want to do is I want to share the story of my dear friend Leyla Hassanian. Leyla Hassanian had a very interesting story that she shared with me back in September when I became acquainted with her. And we are friends, and we talk back and forth. She's a beautiful Iranian lady. And I wanted to share her story with you that I wrote back in September and put on my Cross in the Desert blog. I want you to hear it. I translated it and improved the English, and I put it in the first person. So it's like Layla is talking directly to you. She says, "My name is Layla Hassanian. I was born into a tribal family in the southern part of Iran. I was the second child of parents who had been waiting for many years for the birth of a son. My birth disappointed them. My father was the eldest son of the tribal family. He was desperate for the birth of a male child in order to carry on the family legacy and establish his name. No one was happy with my birth," Layla says. "Even my own grandparents were sad. It wasn't until 4 years later that they were blessed with the birth of a son. That's when the celebration began and the dark clouds of sadness were lifted from their eyes. During my childhood and adolescence, all of the family attention was focused on my brother, and no attention was ever given to the girls. At the age of 20, Layla says, "I became the victim of a forced marriage. My father chose my husband, and my marriage was a disaster from the very beginning. My husband was not pleased with me. Very soon afterwards, we fled to Turkey to become refugees, and that's when my life became almost unbearable. There was no love and communication in our marriage. I couldn't get a job, and I suffered day and night under the harsh control of my husband. I became very depressed, and although I sought counseling and therapy for relief, I couldn't find any help. Unable to sleep at nights because of the stress, I began taking sleeping pills. The immigration office refused to give me any help for my marital problems, and one night, I escaped Ankara. I applied for a divorce at a court in Ankara, and after a week, the immigration office deported me back to the same city that my husband was living in. They detained me and placed me in a large central detention center, where I suffered miserably for 60 days. I could not prove to the courts that my life was in danger if sent back to Iran, and so," Layla says, "I am currently in danger of being deported. I have no ID cards, no interviews with the UNHCR, no human rights in Turkey, and I am forced to work 12 hours a day, earning only $1 an hour. While I'm at work, I am the constant target of sexual and psychological harassment from men. However, in the midst of all of this darkness and despair, I have found hope in Jesus. I am busy studying the Christian faith with other Iranian Christians. For the first time in my life, I have a real peace in my heart. Please pray for me and be my voice. If I'm deported back to Iran, they will deal harshly with me as a Christian. I will surely be imprisoned for the rest of my life. Be my voice in Turkey. I don't want to die." What an incredible story of the hardship that Layla has been suffering from simply because she's female. Gender discrimination. And then harassment. Let me update you a little bit. It's true. Just a few months ago, Layla gave her heart to Jesus. I was so excited to hear this. We have shared about this back and forth on Telegram. I've been sharing scriptures with her. And my friend Molly has linked her up so that she can have Zoom meetings with other Christians. Of course, Christians can't gather together because of the pandemic. So everything is online. So Layla, after her hard work day, has time to go and to these Zoom meetings, and she's being discipled, and she's learning all about the Christian faith, and she's growing, and one day she'll be baptized. That's what she desires. And so I'm so excited. Now, because she doesn't have a work permit and proper IDs, that's the problem. She has to keep her work secret, but she is working right now with an organization from the United Arab Emirates, and she works like a translator and a secretary. She knows both Arabic and Persian, and so she uses her skills on this job. She's a secretary. Now, she does have a lawyer that's helping her keeping her from being deported. Again, her story is on my Facebook page, and there is a link to our PayPal account. If you can help Layla out with anything, please donate, because every bit of that goes directly to her, and she really, really needs the help, because they don't pay her well for the hard work that she does. And it's, as you know, it's very difficult to survive in Turkey. But this is Layla's story. It's a beautiful story, and I'm so excited to share this with you on the broadcast today. We are hearing the stories of Iranian refugees. We're learning about the struggles for them that live in Turkey. And you're being educated today about what life is like for refugees. I have written their stories in my books and in my blogs, and it is such a privilege to be their voice. I want us to take a short break right now and listen to the beautiful worship of Michael W. Smith, a song called Christ All Around Me. I'll be back in about 5 minutes.
As I rise, strength of God, go before, lift me up. As I wake, eyes of God, look upon, be my sight.
the beautiful worship music of Michael W. Smith from his album Project Sovereign, a song called Christ All Around Me. This was actually a prayer of Saint Patrick, a very famous Christian missionary from Ireland, and that's the reason for the song. You're listening to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran today. I'm focusing in on refugees in Turkey. And this next story is really an incredible story. They're all incredible, but I just wanted to share with you that this one is incredible, own merit. It's the story of Rojina and her mother, Parisa. I have really good news. Before I read their story, before I share with you their background, I want to tell you a little bit about what's happening. They have found a very powerful sponsor for them. It is a Christian church in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, that has heard about their story, that has connected with them, and they have agreed to sponsor them. What that means is that they come up with a letter of sponsorship, they connect with the U.S. Embassy in Ankara, Turkey, through the State Department here, and it puts them in the process of eventually getting them out of Turkey into the United States. Now, it sounds easy, but it's not. The good news is they have a sponsor with a Christian church in Philadelphia, but we're trying to link up their sponsorship appeals with the embassy in Turkey and the State Department, and that takes time. But this is very good news for Regina and Parisa. Both of them actually have work permits in the place they live in Turkey. They have a really hard job, and they were explaining to me just yesterday their job. Regina and Parisa, her mother, both work 7 to 11 hours in a flour factory, and they've shown me pictures of it. It's an assembly line. It's really hard work. It's in very hot and hard conditions, and they don't get any breaks. And I said, how can that be? They have a very difficult supervisor, labor boss. He's not very nice. He really is very forceful upon them, very oppressive. So, I mean, they shared with me, even when they have to run to the bathroom, he gets upset. So, I mean, but this is the plight of Iranian refugees. They have a job. They don't get paid much, believe me. They shared that with me. And we're able to reach out with them through Iranian Women Organization to help them. But the good news in all of this is they have a chance in God's perfect timing to leave Turkey in the near future and come here. I'm so excited for them. What I want to do with the time remaining is I want to share this story. Regina spent about 4 hours together on Telegram, and she just basically elaborated on her story. And I wrote it for my blog. It's called Regina, A Light in the Darkness of Turkey. I want you to hear her story as it was shared with me. It's in the first person, so it's like Regina is sitting right across from you, and you're listening to her story. Regina, A Light in the Darkness of Turkey. It has been a very long and difficult 8 years in Turkey as a refugee. Most of the day I am depressed, thinking about all of my friends back in Iran. I miss them so much. I cannot see them. I cannot visit them at school. The memories of my childhood have nearly faded away in the chaos of my life. My teenage years, well, they've all been forgotten. I miss the birthday parties with all of my dear friends. I miss not having my own room where I can just relax and be alone. Instead of remembering the few happy times that I had growing up, all I think about every second of every day is, how will I pay the rent and my bills? There are no jobs for us here. It's like a living hell on earth in isolation because of the virus. Well, now, this was written, by the way, right before they got this job in the flour factory. So there was some good news there. Many prayers answered. Regina says, living in isolation gives me hours to think and ponder about my life. I want to share with you how all of this began. I remember being miserable as an 8-year-old child in school. I was forced to read the Quran and pray. I hated wearing the black manito. It was like a coat that you had to wear, which included the scarf or hijab that covered your hair. I hated this clothing. One day I got so furious that I tore off this silly clothing and just left school. My teacher chased after me, shouting, "Don't do that! You are behaving like a sinner!" Life at home was really not any easier for me either. My mother, Parisa, she was miserable. She had no peace. She felt lost inside. Her parents had pressured her into reading the Quran, and she felt no joy in doing this. My mom had the difficult task of being a single parent after divorcing my father. We were both searching for meaning and purpose in our lives. One day, our neighbor Roya visited us. She could see the misery and despair in my mother's eyes. Roya was a Christian, but because of fearing the government, she was careful not to intrude too much into our lives. She knew we were Muslims. However, that memorable day, that one day, she decided to reach out to us. I'll never forget. Roya recommended that we watched Mohabbat TV. Mohabbat TV was a Christian channel beamed into Iran on the satellite. It featured programs about the Bible and Jesus. She also gave my mom a Persian New Testament, and she asked her, "Would you read it?" "Sure," Parisa said. She agreed. One night, my mom had an incredible dream. In her dream, she had a vision of being visited by Jesus. He burned a symbol of the cross on her arm and said, "This is going to be painful. Being a Christian will not be easy." Parisa woke up frightened. Beads of sweat were rolling down her cheeks. When she gazed at her left arm, she panicked. There was a burn spot on her arm, just like in the dream. She immediately showed her arm to Roya, and Roya took a picture of it. She sent it to her pastor. A few days later, the pastor visited her home, and she prayed for my mom. That was the day that she accepted Christ as her Savior and became a Christian. I immediately recognized the dramatic change in my mother's life. She was no longer angry. As a Muslim, she was always angry. She was never happy. But now, things were different. She was so calm. Her behavior changed, and it was like heaven for me. The pastor gave me a children's Bible and instructed me to read the story of Jesus. I remember how different Jesus was compared to Muhammad. Jesus was kind and compassionate. As a Muslim, all I ever remembered was anger and violence. I never knew what true love really was. One story in the Gospels had a big impact on my life. The night before his crucifixion, when the soldiers came to arrest Jesus, Peter became angry and cut off the ear of Malchus, one of the servants of the high priest. However, Jesus rebuked him and instead healed the servant's ear. I was so impressed by the kindness that Jesus even showed his enemies. This story touched my heart and changed my life at the age of 8 years old. After reading this story, I asked Jesus into my heart and became a Christian too. After becoming a Christian, one of the first things I wanted to do was to share how Jesus changed my life with all my friends at school. However, my mother warned me, "Don't do it. For a Muslim to change their religion in Iran, that's very serious. They can be imprisoned. They can be put to death." I was so excited about my newfound faith, and I just wanted to tell everyone. As soon as I got home from school, I would turn on the Christian music. I played it loud. It filled my heart and mind with so much joy. One of my favorite hobbies is painting. I would make paintings of the cross and decorate the walls of my room with them. For the first time in my life, I was so happy. However, my happiness ended whenever I entered the doors of the school. I was so frustrated that I could not share my faith with my friends. I had to pretend that I still liked Islam and wear that stupid hijab. One day, I told my teacher that I couldn't take it anymore. I explained to her that I was now reading the Bible. Well, the teacher was astonished, and she immediately contacted my mom. She warned her that I must change my behavior or else be expelled from school. My mom took me aside and gently persuaded me to be patient and just to obey my teacher. Well, I reluctantly agreed. I was a straight-A student when I was in school. I really excelled in all my studies, but the day the teacher found out that I was reading the Bible, she began lowering all of my grades to a C. The living waters of happiness that I had found in Jesus was slowly drying up from persecution at school. I will never forget one of the darkest times of my life. When I turned 11 years old, I was sexually abused. My uncle had a friend who was a math teacher. He would often come over to our home. He knew I was struggling in school, so he offered to help me with my math, and my mom agreed. He was a Muslim and knew that we were Christians, but seemed not to be offended or disturbed by our new faith. Whenever my mom left me alone at home, this Muslim man would instruct me in my studies. However, for a solid year, he did more than tutor me in math. He began touching me, putting his hands all over my body. I was terrified. I didn't know what to do. He would stare intently into my eyes and warn me, "If you tell your mother to the government." All I knew how to do was to pray and cry out to Jesus, and Jesus answered my prayer. We loved meeting with other Christians in our home. We were part of a house church movement, meeting secretly for fear of the government. We played our music loud in celebration and raised our voices loudly in prayer at every meeting. One day, the police came to our house while we were on vacation. Fortunately, we were not there. When we returned home, our pastor told us that we must leave immediately and go to Turkey. We are in danger of being arrested. Instead of going to Turkey, my mom took us to a small town named Mayanodob, where we hid out from the government for a year and a half. It was then that I realized, that Jesus had answered my prayer. He had allowed the police to come to our house, so we had to move. When we moved, the sexual abuse ended. It was the last time I would ever see that Muslim man. I was finally safe and protected. The nightmare had finally ended. In 2013, we finally moved to Turkey after an undercover agent came to our home looking for my mother. We sold everything that we had and we left our homeland. It is so sad to say goodbye to the people that you love just to find freedom. We lived for 2 months in Istanbul with my mother's friend, Afsina. As refugees, we were prohibited from getting jobs, so my mother secretly opened up a bakery at home and began selling delicious pastries to all of her Iranian friends. We desperately needed a place to live, and one of my mother's friends connected us with an Iranian man. The Iranian man agreed to help to find us a place. That was one of the worst mistakes that we ever made. This man became controlling and abusive. He demanded money from us for rent, groceries, and bills. He was like living back in Iran. Then one day, he tried to sexually abuse me. Horrible memories of abuse flooded my mind from when I lived back in Iran. He tried to kiss me, but I resisted. He even tried to sexually abuse my mom. We quickly packed up our few belongings and we left. A year after living in Turkey, my mother received her first interview with the UNHCR in Ankara. Her interviewer was a Muslim woman. For 5 or 6 hours, my mother explained why she became a Christian. She shared with her the incredible dream and how Jesus had changed her life forever. Unfortunately, she was rejected. The interviewer didn't believe her story. We found out later that unless we had documents about our baptism, that the immigration board would continue to reject us. Living in Turkey as refugees was extremely difficult. Struggling to provide money for food and rent and waiting forever to be interviewed took a toll on us emotionally. It was during this time that I spent most of the day praying and gazing at the beautiful gold cross that I proudly wore around my neck. I was comforted whenever I gazed upon the cross. However, wearing my cross necklace in public brought much more conflict and persecution to me. I was harassed by many young Muslims, but I refused to hide or cover up my necklace. I loved Jesus. I was unashamed to wear it. I told every person that I met, quote, "This is who I am. I am a Christian. I love Jesus." One day, while at the shopping market, the owner saw the cross around my neck and threw me out of his store. He scolded me and said, quote, "You are a sinner. You need to return to Islam. You are going to hell." I was never afraid to share my faith in Jesus. I would always look at my cross and proclaim, "Jesus is with me all of the time. I have no fear." This personal declaration of faith that Jesus was always with me proved to be an incredible reality that saved my life. In 2018, I was finally offered a job in a hotel working as a translator, selling suites to customers, that is, hotel suites. I waited for hours to speak with the manager. It was almost 2 a.m. I had no way home, and there were no taxis. Finally, the manager appeared and offered to drive me home. I sat in the back seat. I remembered feeling very nervous. Something didn't feel right. Something was wrong. A few minutes later, he pulled the car over and asked me to sit in the front seat next to him. I said, "No," feeling uneasy and afraid. "Are you scared?" he asked me. A few minutes passed by and he forced me into the front seat next to him. I was terrified. My mind was filled with the horrible memories of being sexually molested years ago in Iran. "Are you a Christian?" he asked me. "Don't you ever have sex?" My whole body was trembling. I grabbed my cell phone, but couldn't get a signal to call my mom. "No, I don't have sex," I replied, my voice trembling. "That's a sin before marriage." I looked down at my necklace and nervously began praying, mumbling the words, crying out for Jesus to save me. He began to put his hand on my legs when suddenly his cell phone rang. It was his wife. She demanded to know where he was. His wife became my angel. He finally drove me home and said he would see me again the next day, but I never, ever went back. That is my story so far. I turned 22 this year. It's been another long day in the city of Yalova, Turkey. Another long day in isolation, but as I think back to when I was 8 years old and remember the day that Jesus came into my life, I am no longer depressed. Deep down in my soul, I am grateful. I have joy. I know that Jesus is always with me. He will never leave or forsake me. He has a special purpose for my life. I am holding on to my faith in Jesus. I can honestly confess to you that if I wasn't a Christian, I would have ended my life a long time ago. But thank God I didn't. In the midst of turmoil, I have peace because I know God has a purpose and plan for my life. He has made me a light in the darkness of Turkey. It's just one of the most incredible stories I've ever written. I want to thank Regina for being so patient and sharing this with me over 2 days on Telegram. I'm just so in admiration, in awe of her faith. I cannot even begin to understand the terror that this girl went through in two particular situations back in Iran when this Muslim man abused her sexually, and then when this man in Turkey was about to abuse her. Look what happened. Jesus reached down from heaven and stopped this man. I think it's so humorous that his wife caught him in the act, if you will, and wanted to know, "Where are you?" Wow. This is a dramatic answer to prayer. Rogina is a blessing. She is a hardworking, faithful Christian along with her mother, and now they have an opportunity. If Jesus opens up the door, they can leave Turkey soon and come to live here in a church in Philadelphia. You know, that's less than 1,000 miles away. Wow. I would love to meet Regina and her mother one day. And I just ask you, please go to my Facebook page. You'll see this story here, Regina, A Light in the Darkness. Please share it all over, every page you can. There's a link there. If you feel led to support them financially, it goes to PayPal. It goes to Iranian Women Organization. It goes right directly to Regina and her mother. So whatever the Lord leads you to do, but let me tell you something. If you can't do that, that's understandable. It's tough for all of us right now, but you can pray. Pray for Layla Hassanian. Pray for Regina and Parisa. Pray for Pastor Emil Falahati and his family. These are people that need our prayers, that need our voices, that need our support. Right now, where you and I live, I think things are pretty safe and good. And we take our freedoms way too much for granted. Let's remember that when we think of Regina Parisa, Layla, and Pastor Emil Falahati and his family. They are struggling for freedom, and they're praying that God will intervene. Don't forget them. And the best thing you can do is take this broadcast, take my stories, share it. The more people that read, the more people that can pray, and the more people that can help. So I really appreciate you taking time with me on this journey this morning into Turkey and understanding a little bit better what life is like for Iranian refugees. And I will update all of us as soon as I get any information about the pastor and his family and about Regina and Parisa and Layla as well. I appreciate you taking time. God bless you. I will see you again on Thursday on the cross in the desert. Have a great week.